So I'll get back to that question, which I think you handle in such a respectful yet fascinating way in the book When All Hell Breaks Loose, Cody, about handling the dead. It might have been the very first question I should have asked you, because if disaster strikes so often, that is one of the first things you have to deal with, is what the aftermath of the disaster, the first wave of whatever the disaster is, will create a situation, if it's that bad, where there will be dead people around, and what should you do both psychologically and logistically to handle that? But we'll get back to that in just a second. You were saying, and I didn't mean to stop you at the bottom of the hour, but I had to get to that break.
Well, I was saying what?
Well, if that's okay. My rule is, if you can't remember, then that's okay. But I hate to stop people when they're going into something at the bottom of the hour and then not come back to it. But we were, the book is then all about urban and even suburban survival. And I keep reflecting back on what you were talking about with your friend with the spices, who had this idea about stockpiling spices and using that as currency in the advent that there was going to be some huge societal breakdown, that you could use spices as a way of getting things. I just wonder how many different, if you had a lot of salt, if you had like a big bag of salt, you would have not just salt to use for, you know, your own food and for regulating, you know, your body's need for a certain amount of salt, but also you could use it to preserve food, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, salt is one of the unsung wonders. I mean, here in my country, there's records of the Indians walking to Salt Lake City to get salt and back again. I mean, that's like a, you know, a seven, or maybe it's a 500-mile one-way trip to do that. And now think about what was very important in indigenous times, just a few hundred years ago here in this country. It was fat and salt. And then we wonder why people just love potato chips with extra salt. And I think this is kind of this unsung thing within us all that knows, wow, this is really precious stuff.
A primal need for potato chips. A primal need. Okay.
Well, think about things now. Everything's low fat, low salt.
Well, what else could you do with salt? You could use it to cook, whether you could use it to preserve food, you could use it for currency. Is there anything else that salt comes in handy for?
That's a good question. I know there's a book out there that's called literally Salt, and
really?
It's all the different uses and history of it. Those are some of the biggies that are right off the back. I mean, it's only about 1 a.m. here when I'm talking to you after flying all day long. So the main thing is for your body, because if the body requires sodium, there's that sodium-potassium balance flip-flopping back into the cell membrane, which is critical to you breathing and living. And people take that for granted. So when I can go to the discount store, and this is a decadent culture, you know what I mean? When I can go and buy one of the most precious things to indigenous peoples all over the world, a 25-pound sack for like 10 bucks, we've gone full circle. And I do have salt stored. I think it'll be a great barter tool, and mainly for the body, you know, for flavoring, not just for flavoring, but we need it in our physiology. What my illustrator did, Russ Miller, for the book, he's a big rabbit raiser, and he did that with the first Bush War because he saw the writing on the wall with that one and started raising a lot of his own food for his family. And he took a bunny, butchered the bunny, and put the bunny in coarse salt and regular table salt in like an unsealed Tupperware bowl for 16 months, just this raw rabbit after he'd gutted it and skinned it. And he said the meat after 16 months was not only still pliable, it had a slightly salty taste when he cooked it, but it was good to go, you know? So, yeah, it's a potential preservative. Both my grandparents had the big clay crocks that were used to salt food, and it was that way for a reason because, well, you know, the refrigerator, how long has that been here? Air conditioning has been here since the 1950s. You know, all this stuff that we're enjoying now wasn't here not that long ago.
Right. All right. Well, great. Now, onto this thing about the bodies. I really loved how you wrote about this because you hit it from all sorts of different aspects. What could be more devastating to the psychology of somebody trying to survive a calamity than seeing somebody dead nearby, not knowing what to do about it, And then it, and that, that dead body somehow, or dead bodies, becoming not just a threat to their physical health, but also to their mental health, because it, it, it pushes you to the edge of thinking that could be you, when psychologically you want to be thinking in an entirely different direction.
You bet, yeah. And you wouldn't believe the torment I had to go through to get information on that. The CDC didn't have it. The World Health Organization didn't have it. FEMA didn't have it. Ready.gov, you know, yeah, right. There's, it, I just, I had to go to this obscure hospital website, like protocol page, about how to deal with the corpse as far as the medical realm is concerned. Now, I have a permit to collect roadkill from the Arizona Game and Fish. So I've dealt with a lot of nasty stuff on the side of the road, but not a bloated human corpse. And I also talked to a funeral director as well. And what I learned, I didn't know it either, from the World Health Organization, they put out something in 2002, that dead bodies, unless they die of a disease, they do not spread disease. So if someone keels over or gets crushed in a car accident, the dead body there is not all of a sudden going to have cholera or some contagious disease. What's been happening, and I'm sure you've seen it in the news, is in India, you know, something happens, or Pakistan or wherever,
right,
they immediately burn the corpses because they're freaked out about corpses causing disease. So they've shifted all those resources that could be used to help the living to the dead. You know, and yes, corpses will decompose. The decomposition rate is dependent upon two factors. One is the ambient outdoor air temperature, and the other is the unknown quantity of how many bacteria are in the gut. So you could have two dead bodies side by side on an 80-degree day, and one looks like post-toasties in a couple hours, and one might still be looking good after 8 hours. So those are the variables. But one, I want your readers or your listeners to know that dead bodies, unless they died of a disease that's contagious, do not spread disease. Okay, so although it's a buzzkill to have Uncle Frank there in the front yard dead, you do have a few hours or whatever to deal with other stuff after a disaster, like helping the living. This is like right after something happens, obviously. But that body, if no one's around to do cleanup, you might have to do 911 yourself. And I want to emphasize with your listeners again, if you ever have to deal with a corpse, you better document everything with pictures and writing, because there's a legion of people that come in to deal with dead people, forensic scientists, and you're going to be asked a ton of questions if all of a sudden you have a corpse in your backyard, you know, under 3 foot of earth.
Yeah, I think that's the part that's really, I thought that was a really compelling argument, that even in the midst of a disaster, it's important if you have pictures that you can show, if you're going to dig, if you're going to bury somebody, make sure that you can document every step you took along the way, and that you can try to show as much as possible any evidence that you didn't have anything to do with this person's death.
You bet. And it's just, yeah, and all the belongings can be in a Ziploc bag on that person, in the ground or whatnot.